Now, all four of our canonical gospels are important and special and beautiful in their own way, and the Gospel of Luke is still my favorite. For whatever reason, this was really the first book of the Bible in which I saw the incredible artistry and craft that it went into making it. Luke, who traditions say was a physician, is also a poet. Our canticle, which we labeled as the psalm, but our canticle today is actually from Luke. It's someone foretelling the rise of John the Baptist and Jesus. Luke is also just a really good writer. Take our gospel passage today. But really, to understand this passage, like any great work of literature, we have to go back to the beginning, to Luke 4, when Jesus begins his adult ministry. First, Jesus is baptized by his cousin John in the Jordan. Then he's led by the Spirit into the wilderness, where he is tempted by the devil. And the temptations are worded differently, but they're all basically the same. Save yourself. Worship me, the evil one says, and I will give you food, safety, and power. All that the world has to give. We're told that after Jesus resisted each of those three temptations, that the devil departed from him until an opportune time, or until the next opportunity, depending on your translation. But in that phrase, Luke offers us some foreshadowing. The evil one is gone, but waiting in the wings while Jesus preaches and teaches. The evil one is waiting, it seems, until today, till the crucifixion we read about today. And at this moment, when we might think that Jesus is at his lowest, raised high on the cross for all to see, the tempter returns three times, did you count them? The crowd, the leaders, the soldiers, and the other crucified criminal all tempt Jesus. And this time, they don't even dress it up. They just say, save yourself. If you could save others, if you are the king, if you are the Messiah, just hop down from that cross and be on your way. This is an opportune time, and the evil one is back. Which at least I find profoundly relatable, right? It's so often when we are at our lowest, when our sufferings are at their peak, that the voice of temptation is at its loudest. Terrible boss, terrible coworkers, save yourself. Fudge that report, let everybody else deal with the consequences. Horrible market, another great recession looming, save yourself. Stockpile what you have and make sure to give nothing away. Spouse being awful, kids at their worst, save yourself. Turn up the volume on the TV and zone out. Make no mistake, the evil one can smell an opportune time a mile away. We too are tempted and often in similar ways to how Jesus was, first in the wilderness and then on the cross. We don't, of course, have the same power as Jesus because we are not God. But we are tempted too, to alter our own reality, to abuse our own power, to worship false idols, and to save ourselves. Now, if we were left here alone in this temptation, we would really be in trouble. But the text also powerfully demonstrates, all the Gospels do, that is when we are at our lowest, when our sufferings are at their peak, when we are sorely tempted, Jesus is there. Jesus is there right alongside us. And in Jesus, God takes on our life, our flesh, and our suffering, and joins to it, offering us a way through. Although perhaps not an easy way out. We wonder then why it is so hard to see Jesus when we are in the midst of pain. Many reasons, really. First, we're only human. Sometimes our pain is so intense. Sometimes our struggles get so deep that we cannot see anything else. Maybe it's only years later. I bet a lot of you have this experience. If years later you look back on something you got through and see only then how the grace of God held you throughout. I also say I've heard sexual assault survivors and torture victims talk about feeling completely lifted out of their bodies during the assault and how they now understand that to be a blessing directly from God, to be temporarily disassociated. But those are extreme examples. The reality is that even everyday pain comes with its own temptations. There's that temptation to turn inwards and to isolate. Pain can make us myopic, unable or unwilling to see who or what might be right next to us. Someone once described trauma to me as a gut punch that makes us curl up into ourselves. There's also the fact that to turn to Jesus often means to face and accept our own guilt. That second criminal crucified with him, imagine the strength in his moment of pain. he turns to Jesus and accepts his part in his own suffering. He asks then simply that Jesus remember him. It's a confession that Jesus accepts, having already prayed for forgiveness for all. Jesus accepts him and returns with a promise of reconciliation. The word here used at the end of the passage, by the way, is only used a few other times in the New Testament, and always to refer to the garden in Genesis 1. Jesus is inviting the repentant criminal into the paradise of that original garden, where he lived in harmony with all creation. No fear, no shame, in direct communion with God. The truth is, though, that Jesus does not take that guy off the cross any more than he takes himself off. What he offers this criminal and us in this moment is entirely new reality, a new hope. He offers us that garden, a way to see through and beyond what is happening to us at any particular moment. Because I think that actually the biggest temptation that we face is really the same as Jesus: food, power, safety. These three things are actually all the same. They're the temptation to save ourselves, the temptation to rely solely on what the world offers as our only and ultimate reality and as the only hope that we have. And yet, when we can turn and see Jesus, when we really turn to him, accepting our own guilt, facing our own pain, then we know, as Paul knew when writing this very trippy Colossians reading we have today, that there is another reality that lies behind what we see. There's a greater reality. It's the same reality that moves the young to dream dreams and see vision and the old to prophecy, as the scriptures put it. And remember, to prophecy in the Bible is not to foretell the future. It is to point out what God is already doing. And what God is already doing, has already done in Jesus and on the cross, is to offer us a far better hope than the world can ever offer us. To offer us the hope that love really will overcome hate. The hope that forgiveness, and actually more than forgiveness, real reconciliation will overcome estrangement. The hope, the secure knowledge that death has been conquered once and for all. That is the reality that God offers us on the cross. And if we can turn and see that, if we can resist the temptation just to sink into ourselves, if we can be strong enough to admit that we have messed up, then we get to see Jesus. Then we get to fix our eyes not on the thin version of salvation or healing that the world offers us, but on true freedom, true salvation. That is what God offers us. And that hope has been with us all along. Amen.